Hello and welcome to another episode of the PD Performance Podcast. I am joined by Brenda Bannon today of the Fermanagh Ladies Footballers, and we had a very deep conversation about her own personal growth over the last few months, her growth on social media, and her growth from a mental aspect in sport and in her coaching journey as well. So hopefully you all enjoy it, and if you do enjoy it, please remember to like it, share it, and send it. Brenda, welcome to the PD Performance Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
It's great.
I'm excited, nervously excited. So,
what were the nerves about coming down the car today?
I suppose it's always the unknown, but then when you're here, it's just generally a conversation.
Yeah, and you're well able to talk anyway, and we have a lot to talk about. You were just down in Castlebar there. How did the session go? You were on the hamstring rig.
Yeah, so just come up from Castlebar there. It's my second time down with the SISM clinic in Castlebar. So they have H-rigs or hamstring rigs down there. Earlier in the year, I availed of the GPA testing scheme that they were running for basically test hamstring strength using an isometric H-rig. And I have been dealing with proximal hamstring tendinopathy since probably mid last year, so I was interested to see how they could help me, and got the testing done, and they said I'd really benefit from getting H-rig sessions. So I'm trying to go down once every 6 to 8 weeks if I can. So the second session today, and the first time I went down, I was like so shocked at how simple but how difficult it was. So similarly today, now maybe not as difficult as the first time round. I literally felt like I was dragging the leg around me after the first rehab session on the H-rig, but beneficial all the same. Like, they put you in loads of run specific positions, which is really hard to mimic in the gym. So yeah, I'm definitely finding that the hamstring is clearing up, but maybe not quite fully yet. Hopefully by the time we get the length of the championship, we'll have that sorted.
Are you still training multiple times a week then, and then you're trying to get exposure to that, as you said, every 6 to 8 weeks, but then do your own ISOs outside of that in your gym sessions too?
Yeah, so what I'm doing at the minute is I'm loading the hamstring, obviously, on the pitch with high speed running, which we as athletes are less so in control of, but then inside my gym sessions as well, I'm doing like a heavy slow eccentric, I'm doing isometrics, and then they've also, since I started going down to the SISM clinic with the hamstring rig, the physio's advice for me to do like long lever ISOs or post pitch loading. So that's what I've been doing once a week. So I'm loading the hamstring probably 3 to 4 times a week and trying to load it when I'm fresh and then have 2 days recovery in between times. So yeah, it is a lot of work, but I feel like it's definitely what it's needed and it's moving in the right direction as a result.
Have you experienced that ever before, or is it newish this year?
The hamstring tendinopathy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I picked it up. It was probably on the run up to the Ulster final last year. It was probably when I first found it, and it was a completely new sensation for me because I've never really had a hamstring issue before. I had a small hamstring tear when I was about 16. Never had an issue with my hamstring since. So it was an unusual sensation for me at the time, especially with being so proximal. Like, it literally is right up there in your bottom, like in your bum cheek. So I wasn't sure whether it was glute, whether it was hamstring. So when it did come on, then it did take the second opinion from a physio for it to be diagnosed properly. And I think it's kind of like nearly a taboo subject within physio at the minute, or sports medicine, is that everyone has a different idea of how you should rehab it. So I've went down several wrong routes before, which I hopefully am on the right route at the minute.
Everybody has their own system. Doesn't mean any are wrong.
Yeah.
They are just not right for that particular athlete.
Yes,
at that particular time.
Probably more the terminology I was supposed to use there, but I've just found like different things have not suited me and have actually aggravated it more.
Yeah, they're not the right thing
in the
for
last
you.
6 months. Yeah, so now I find, so previously what I was doing was like I was loading it from the hip, I was doing eccentrics, I was hinging, and that was really aggravating it. Then on top of, like, because I'm an online coach and radiographer, I spend a lot of the day sitting. So I'm in that hinging position a lot day to day. And it did take a couple of weeks to realize this is actually making things worse rather than making it better. So now, as a result, we're kind of going down more the isometric approach and loading it from the knee rather than the hip, avoiding those deep hinging positions. And it seems to be working better. So it's took a little bit of time. It has been frustrating to figure out what has worked for me, but this seems to be working well for me now.
What has changed in the last 2 years, do you reckon, in regards to your own performance or your own lifestyle?
in the last 2 years. I'd say the change has generally been made maybe since 2018, like, so it's maybe 6-7 years plus. The change has gradually been made. I think when I returned home from Australia 2017, I had a massive eye-opener when I returned into county football that I was overweight. I'd never found myself in that category. Probably struggled to get up and down the pitch. Like, I've always really enjoyed running, but I was still able to run, like, long, slow runs, but maybe not able to get up and down the pitch the same rate that I had in previous years. Made me take a massive look at myself. I think I had a lot of body confidence issues as a result. I think then I really knew that I had to make a change in terms of my body composition and how I was to go about that. I was completely uneducated at the time. As I was saying there, I'm coming from a radiography background, so I'm relatively new to the S&C world or sports performance world. So actually, as a 21-year-old at the time, didn't know how to change my body composition. You know, and there's girls out there, like, I know I have clients out there that genuinely don't know. They think eating healthy foods, but potentially a lot of them could change your body composition, but in fact doesn't. So that was actually the approach I was going down, is eating massive volumes of what I thought were healthy foods, but still gaining weight. And next thing, I find myself at 77 kilos. I'm sure that's heavier than you, Petey, is it?
Thanks, Brenda. Not at the moment, since I came back from Oz, maybe since I had the health scare, but
it was
a
big jump for me anyway. Well, like, when you consider me now, like, I'm probably a well put together athlete and I'm 62 to 3 kilos. Like, I've managed to get my body weight under control, but it doesn't belong spiraling. And I think it's only when you get to a certain point and you realise, God, this is really limiting my athletic capability, that something has to give. So I invested in a coach. He's since an S&C coach and probably one of the ones that I really admire and look up to. I think he's just changed my whole outlook in general on my approach to nutrition, even like how I'd manage my gym work. Like, I was going to the gym initially probably just to change my body composition, to look better, to feel better. And yes, it does give all that, but if you go about it in the right way, then it'll actually change your athletic capabilities on top of that, which is even more beneficial for me as an athlete.
I should probably take off my coach hat and put on my podcast hat. But initially I was asking a question in regards to trying to discern why the hamstring tendinopathy was flaring up in the last 2 years, because your physical outputs potentially have changed, or the movement demands of the sport potentially have changed. But I don't think the positional requirements for you have changed, because you've been playing in midfield or in the middle third for the last few years. But potentially, if you did significantly alter your body composition, then your physical outputs, as in your max speed and the amount of high speed running that you're getting through in the game, has changed. So therefore your loads are slightly different. Not to mention all of the stress of trying to change career, as well as trying to keep going as radiographer and do your best in that field, as well as consistently putting out good information for good young girls on social media. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. Like, I do feel at times that I'm juggling life on a unicycle. Many, many balls going at once. I think in terms of, like, the last year, in terms of the hamstring, I suppose now I've had to reflect and look back as to what maybe I would do differently. And I do think, like, at one point last year, I was doing, like, very heavy, heavy eccentrics, and I think it was on a week that I'd maybe done heavy eccentrics and straight to the pitch, which I thought would be like a technical tactical session, ended up into high speed running session, and that was where the main flare up occurred. I don't know, maybe not so much inside my control, but I think that was the trigger at the time for it. But as you say, yes, my physical outputs may have changed. I probably last year was probably one of the strongest I've ever been. So yeah, I'm definitely able to like attack the ground better. I'd say my outputs are much, much better. I wouldn't say overall, like, my max speed is much improved, maybe like 0.1, 0.2. It's hard to know. I just had a change.
That's a lot.
I just had a change in GPS vest too. So it's really hard to correlate it. We've just went from Apex to Stat Sports. So it's very hard for me to correlate if there's a massive change there. But I think all the time I'm better myself as an athlete in the gym and on the pitch. And like, I'm definitely stronger and faster. So potentially, yeah.
Are you enjoying it more than when you left or when you initially came back?
From Australia?
Yeah.
I think I've like, I've opened my eyes to it. I'm really looking at it as a, I have a whole different perspective to it now as I had before. Like, it was completely recreational before, like nearly like an outlet. Growing up, I probably had like a difficult enough family circumstance, so sport was the main outlet. I just went to be with my friends. It was a release from maybe exam stress or whatever was going on at home. But probably post Australia then, and post probably my change in body composition, and probably as I've became like a better all-round athlete, I've probably thought, God, you know, I've only got X amount of years left here. Let's really have a crack at this. Let's have a go at it. Like, I think even I remember conversations that went on in the dressing room pre-Australia of like us wanting to get out of Division 4, wanting to play Division 3 football. And I was honestly just happy being there. But it's not so much like that now. Like, I want to be there. I want to be a regular start. Okay, we've got that now. We're still not comfortable. We don't want to be comfortable. We want to keep on pushing, pushing, pushing. So that's probably, I've probably more of a growth mindset is probably where it is at than I had in previous years. Like, I'm just destined for more and more and more and pushing for more and more, because realistically, like, I'm 29 now, I'm kicking the arse 30, and there may only potentially be, if I go traveling to Australia as well at the end of the year, which I'm planning to do, I may only have 2-3 more years of intercounty football left. And it's such a special, unique time of your life, and you don't even realize it when you're in it, because you're literally riding across your of a wave with your friends that, okay, we need to start maxing out here to get us to where we need to be, which is for Fermanagh Division 3 hopefully in time. And the big one's coming up this year is the Junior All-Ireland, and we need to put our stamp on that because we've yet to win it in Croke Park.
There's nothing wrong with just being happy to be there as well in certain groups, potentially maybe at club level more than county level. Do you still play with girls that you reckon are still just happy to be there? And does that happen more at club level? And do you have to change your communication style slightly at club level as a result? Because I know you come from a very successful club as well, so I'm questioning whether it's the case that everybody's there because they want to achieve.
Yeah, like, I suppose you have to be a bit more inclusive and go easier on girls in club. Like, you can't just pull up a drill and be like, here, this is not good enough. You have to let things go. Balls do drop. Like, you've girls that are coming up, but you have to really, I suppose, what's the word that I'm looking for?
Just be a little bit nicer.
No, I'm nice all the time.
Yeah, I know. But I know, and I understand. But I've seen the same thing, and I've observed the same thing with girls that have come back from county level and come into club level. And I think the difference is probably that although the content that they're putting forward to the group or putting forward to the person, the constructive criticism that they're giving is the same criticism they'd give at county level, I think they can be a little bit more direct at county level and just state the work on, whereas at club level it's almost like they need to sandwich their feedback slightly and give something positive. And then
you have to be a wee bit more aware of your terminology that you use in club. It's more of like 2 stars and a wish, depending on the person. Like, I think for us, we have quite good youth athletes coming up at underage with their Argonne Harps, and you have to nurture those. You want to keep them. I've seen what the dropout is like. We have a couple of girls now who are very important panel members for their Argonne, and they've went to uni across in England, and you know, we cannot wait to get them back during the summer, you know. But there's going to be a period of maybe 2 or 3 weeks where the handling mightn't be great and things like that, but you have to look after those girls and nurture them, because everyone is valued in the club. So yes, it can't all be push.
Have you seen the same thing in any other teammates, that there has been a switch that they've realized we've limited time here and we need to make a push to do something?
Yeah, definitely. Probably at club level, even still, there is girls there that are probably nearing the end of their career. They'll probably, in the same token, still keep going for another 5, 6, 7 years, and they're older than me still. And you can see them just wanting to make something. Like, They're a great, great group. There's one particular girl, Andrea Gordon, and she's our captain. And honestly, she's a role model for me. Never mind the young ones coming behind her, but she wants to play with her daughter, who is, I think she's 8 now coming up. And she wants to play senior level with her daughter, but she also wants to make the most of us now in senior championship and Division 1. She wants to make the most of that before she retires herself, and she's well into her 30s. So yeah, she's a massive role model. But I think even... I suppose as a ladies cohort, it's in Fermanagh especially as well, we've only got exposure to S&C, and there's only girls that are maybe realising in the last year or two their athletic potential and be like, okay, where can we actually take this? So I suppose there is definitely a couple of girls, more than Andre, that spring to mind that are really trying to make hay now over the last couple of years of their career, which is, it's deadly to see,
but it sounds like it probably comes with a little bit of added pressure as well, in that it sounds like you put pressure on yourself to achieve, as well as there's the added pressure of those teammates that may be ending their career soon and they want to achieve too. Mm-hmm. Do you do well with the pressure? Do you accept it and take it on your shoulders, or does potentially it get to you at times?
I don't look at it as pressure, to be honest. I look at it more like I've like a predefined goal. And okay, we've set out how we're going to get there. And if my application is 90 to 100%, then if I still fail at that, then I'm happy enough to sort of part my way with that and go ahead on to the next thing or readjust that goal. Like, I don't think that I put a massive pressure myself to achieve something that I've put out. Yes, we have to reach for that as such. And as long as your application and your process towards that is to the highest standard that you can apply, then if you don't get there, then it's not the absolute end of the world, and you have to be able to just swipe your hands from that and walk away. So that's kind of the way I look at it. But yeah, I would say that I am definitely not a high achiever, but I definitely aim for to achieve highly, and I think I'm very driven, and my application is more or less spot on. Like, I give everything every time I'm there. I'm sure if you ask anyone that has trained alongside me, do I train hard, I'm a bluffer, and they'd be like, absolutely not. So I think that's sort of the way I look at it. Like, I don't put a massive amount of pressure on myself. In terms of games and things like that, like, I wouldn't put massive pressure on myself. Like, I'd break it down, try and do the simple things right. Like, I would still get very nervous for games, but I don't think it's pressure as such to perform. I think it's more like excitement.
You've reframed that in your mind, though. Yeah. You've turned the nerves into excitement, which is a very positive approach to dealing with it. But just from what you've said there, it's clear that your brain is quite logical. You work quite logically. Have you been that way inclined throughout your life, and is that why you find yourself working in science? Maybe you're more mathsy kind of brain than a creative.
God, maths was never the strong point.
English then is more creative.
Suppose so. Yeah, I'm probably like quite process orientated. Like, everything in my mind has to have a specific process to get there. It may not always be linear, but yeah, I think, yeah, I probably am quite process orientated.
Is that why you want to become a strength and conditioning coach? Because I'm sure there's been a lot of people that have said to you, why do you want to be a strength and conditioning coach? You have a great career already.
Yeah, like, I'm a massive people person. I love helping people. I love working with teams. I just thrive in the team environment and being pushed. I suppose given that exposure to other people who want similar things that I have wanted in the past or do continue to aspire to want, it definitely gives me like a sense of purpose. I feel transitioning now from a radiography career towards an S&C career. I find, especially working the HSE in the public sector, like, everything is quite monotonous. There's sort of like a conveyor belt sort of ethos with the HSE. It's like, how many people can we get in here? How many people can we scan every day? But I think when you're working one-to-one with a team or an athlete, you have to sit down, break it down. You get time to spend with each individual. You actually get to know the person, and you can see the value that you're given in their subsequent performance or their metrics or whatever I put that they were maybe testing on that particular day. Whereas that, I don't really get that sort of stimulus, or I don't get that from working in the HSE as a radiographer. Like, you might see a patient once for 2 minutes for a chest x-ray and you may never potentially see them again. Like, I don't feel like I'm actually impacting the world, although some people do consider the career a complete vocation. But in my eyes, no, it's not stimulating enough.
You're not developing relationships, really.
No.
They're just there, almost a number. So then clearly you're not completely logical.
I have found a niche of radiology that I do quite like. And it's actually, it's more therapeutic than diagnostic. I am what's called a diagnostic radiographer. So we diagnose illnesses and pathology through imaging. But the area of radiology that I like is called interventional radiology. So we actually intervene into illnesses. So you may have a cancer patient that's coming in to get a line inserted pre-chemotherapy. So you actually feel like you're intervening to help. And I feel a little bit more fulfilled in that role as such. So yeah, I guess that I want to be involved with people. I want to see people day to day. And I guess that's what S&C gives me that radiology doesn't give me. Plus, it's in the sporting environment. So that's obviously a massive plus, because I just love being there. I love the buzz of it. I love the team environment. I love the competitiveness, everything about it. So
that's clear to see from the energy change there from just talking about it. Is there anything that did concern you initially when you begun or you began starting the transition into S&C?
I suppose what people would think, namely my family, to be honest, and they still don't get it, I don't think. Going back to whenever I actually took on the career of radiology, like, or as a radiographer, I was going to uni simply because the fees were paid by the NHS. I was pretty much guaranteed a job at the end. It was a well-known career. I'd be working in a hospital, and I guess my family, especially coming through a recession, like, my dad is a plasterer, he's seen what it's like to be without work. So my ones were only delighted to see me going into a career as a radiographer. But I never really thought, as a 17 or 18 year old, like, what do I like doing? What does Brenda like doing outside of what the family wants for her? And like, I obviously love sport, and I came one of the top in GCSE PE, and like, how that wasn't a spark to initiate, okay, you're good at this, you like this area. I still went along with it. Two of my best friends from school, they were going the same direction as well, both radiographers now. They absolutely love the career, unlike myself. But what was the question again? I've kind of went off on a tangent there.
It's not written on the paper, Brenda. I just pulled them out of my arse.
Yeah.
It was in regards to your concerns.
Concerns, yeah. So I suppose I was really worried about what my ones would think. And it was during COVID, when literally day to day, all you had to go to was your 9-to-5 job. And I was coming home so unfulfilled, so unhappy, because I didn't have my outlet of sport to go to. We're coming home and running around the track in the evening. We're going to the gym shed. The shed that was literally had a rack and a couple of dumbbells in it. And that was the best part of my day. I was like, right, something has changed, because I cannot stay working this career till I'm 67 or 8 years old. Like, I'd be so unhappy. And I think at that point, I began to realise, okay. And, you know, it's sad enough to me to think of it now, that probably everything I'd done was literally just following the status quo, following the crowd, what my friends were doing, what my family were doing. I wanted to just genuinely just be happy. As sad as that sounds, I just really wanted to be happy. And I wasn't happy day to day going into work as a radiographer. And at that point, it kind of exhausted all options in terms of different modalities that I could work as a radiographer in. So I had worked in Drogheda, I'd worked across in England, I'd worked down in Sligo, I'd since just transferred into Cavan, and I was constantly looking for somewhere that I would maybe be happier, some environment I would be happier in. It wasn't an environment, it was the career. So I was really nervous then what my ones would think. So I'd done like a PT course and a nutrition coaching course to start with, and I think my ones still think it's going to be a fad or a phase and she'll get over it. Same with the inter-county thing. Like, my ones are not into sport really at all. I have one brother that plays, but the rest of them, like, if there was football on the front street, they'd be out the back street having a barbecue. Like, they wouldn't care less about it. So yeah, I was nervous, especially Daddy. Like, Daddy was so proud of me graduating as radiographer, and I actually missed my graduation because I was in Australia, and he was devastated. He's still no picture. No graduation
picture. That's a big one for the parents.
So I was worried what he would say. But I think genuinely, since we've had a loss in the family since I lost Mummy in 2020, and I think after that, my ones have, not that they've been overly career orientated for myself, I think they're just happy to see me really happy off the back of that. And then I suppose going on from that, other worries would be, okay, like long term, how am I going to stimulate an income from this? Like inevitably down the line, there'll be children, there'll be maternity leave. I'm going to get older. I won't have the same body in 40 years time. I may not be able to squat to the floor like I can today. Just how am I going to long term stimulate an income from that is probably another worry that I've had. I've had loads of help from the GPA in terms of establishing my business, and I think that has left me a little bit more assured to my career as an S&C long term. And I'm happy with the direction I'm going in, and I'm going to continue to go on in that direction.
It's a lot there. I think to touch on the first point, it's your life. And I think it's a lot sadder to say that some people continue to go to with the status quo because they're expected to do so. Whereas it sounds like, in recent years, because of circumstances, there has been a journey of self-awareness that has led to you now, at least, being a little bit more happier in what you're doing. Is that a journey that you're continuing on at the moment and still going on that journey of self-discovery? And then where are you at with it now? Because I know you just had a significant trip to Lisbon that I was speaking to you about.
I wouldn't say it's too significant.
But it is significant for you.
Like, it's mad that it takes a massive change in your life or a massive stimulus, not always positive either, to really evoke that change in you as a person. And for me, it was losing Mummy in 2020 that made me take a step back and have a look at myself of where I was as a person, where my mental health was, and what I was doing with my career going forward, what I was doing with my life in general. So yeah, I guess one of the main things that I've probably, journey that I've embarked on that's stimulated that change, was going into therapy after Mum had died. So I'd got a counsellor, and like, there was loads of areas that I'd identified. Like, I was seriously anxious socially, and you may not think that by me sitting here now chatting away, but yeah, so it's been a constant process, or it's been an evolutionary process for me, just evolving as a person, figuring out who I am, and basically getting a wee bit more from myself day to day so that I can go home and sleep a wee bit easier at night. So yeah, I guess it's a continual process, but I'm definitely a good bit down that road than I was in 2020.
Brenda, I get quite anxious socially as well, and I have a podcast. Like, I'm fine in one-on-ones.
Yeah.
But generally, if I go into a group scenario, like, some thoughts do come in that are kind of me thinking about how I'm being perceived.
Yeah.
I think there's a correlation sometimes with that and putting stuff out on social media.
Yeah.
And there's definitely something there that needs to be explored a little bit about building a personal brand and then trying to live up to that expectation when you meet people outside of that.
Yeah.
Has that been a difficult thing since the page has kind of grown a lot in the last few months?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, definitely. So I would say, like, much like yourself, I'm very good on a one-on-one, probably good on a one-on-two or a one-on-three, but any more than that, I find myself just going into my shell. So it actually takes a lot for me to be, even on the pitch, a leader in an environment maybe with girls that I don't know fully. So it takes me a wee while to get comfortable in that environment. So I guess my role has been revolutionized, or it's been developing as a player as well as a person as well. But what I would say is, especially from the social media perspective, things have grown probably quite rapidly in the last 12 months, and someone had mentioned it to me before, and I never really thought of it too much until they mentioned it. It's actually a sports psychologist that mentioned it too, and I was like, you've definitely put a bit of reverse psychology on me now, is because you work in the performance realm and you're an S&C coach, do you think you have an expectation to live up to as a player? And yes, I'd say I definitely went through a period of that maybe last year, but I think now, like, I can just relax in the fact that I am given everything that I can as a player. I have built my career, or my career as an S&C coach, simply upon the fact that I was probably an underdeveloped athlete with a lot of drive, maybe not a lot of skill. And that's probably how I've built my career even as a Gaelic footballer to date. So I think I can rest easy knowing that I am still that person. I'm only human. I will make mistakes. I've never been the most skilled athlete, but if I continue to apply myself and work hard like I have done, I still probably will come home with a decent enough result or happy enough for my performance at the end of the day. So I guess it depends what way you look at it. And really, if people think that about you, it's more of a reflection of them as a person than you. So that's probably the way I've had to reframe that in my mind, rather than placing a massive amount of pressure on myself to perform and look outstanding because I'm supposed to be a coach and I'm supposed to be an S&C coach in the performance environment. I have to remember who I am and where I've came from, and that's the reason why I am where I am today. And a lot of people resonate with that, I feel, too. A lot of young girls resonate with that, probably men as well. Like, really and truly, in any team environment, are you going to have maybe 2 to 4 or 5 absolute naturally skilled freaks within the team? The rest of the team's going to be composed of athletes and hard workers. I'm one of those.
Do you think there's a negative aspect to associating hard work and the diligence of that work to the outcome all of the time, in that sometimes you can work a little bit too hard than is necessary?
Yeah, I've definitely fell victim to that. Like, you can try really, really hard every single play and it may not be the outcome that you particularly want.
What about in your outside life?
As in working really hard and still not getting an outcome?
As in, you may get the outcome, but sometimes you don't. And when you don't, because you've associated that hard work with the outcome, your answer is, and my answer is,
yeah,
okay, I'll just work harder. Okay. At the expense of your own energy. Does that ever happen?
I suppose you have to draw a line as to how much harder can you actually work. But that's more of like probably a perfectionist mentality that I have definitely experienced 100%. If something isn't, not right now, but like probably pre-2020, if something was not as I imagined, I'd lose the bob. I'd flip, freak out. It could be something as small as the wing in my eyeliner. I'm not joking. Or it could be that I could not kick with my instep in a particular drill and I just lose the bop with it. I'm like, no, I'm leaving that go. Whereas at a certain point, you have to realize, okay, maybe this isn't working today. We'll leave it be. We'll come back in a fresh state. We'll try again. Like, but not going harder and harder and harder to the detriment. You have to be able to leave things down at a certain point.
You've spoke about going to therapy as well as speaking with sports psychologists. And a lot of what people in those fields both do is just ask you good questions so that you lead yourself to your own answers. It sounds like you have a lot of answers about yourself now, why you do certain things, and what potentially is a more positive habit that you can implement into your life to be happier. Do you think you could have done that without people in both of those fields? Or has that been something that's accelerated that development?
Yeah, it's definitely accelerated that development. Like, I don't think I would have ever been comfortable enough to sit with myself, to ask myself those questions without that being provoked by another person. It's definitely not a mind space that I would have ever even ventured into in my younger days. So yeah, it's difficult to ask those questions and try and come up with the answers. And you find yourself regurgitating answers from somewhere you've read or something you've seen on social media, but it may not be actually a true reflection of how you actually feel.
I'm just laughing because my therapist once said to me, Peter, I'm going to ask you a question now and don't give me any of that business bullshit because I'm pissing her off with my cliche answers. And that's a protective or defense mechanism at times as well. But you do kind of believe it when you tell it to yourself enough times. It's their job to pose the hard questions that actually get you to question your beliefs and realize why your beliefs are there in the first place. Mm-hmm. If someone was going through something similar, and a lot of people are, and a lot of people are reluctant to go to therapy, what would you say to them?
I think if there's any doubt there at all, it's worth going just the once. And likewise, if you are going and you're not feeling any benefit from it, it's not the therapy. Change the therapist. Change the modality. I've had to do that. And I was close to quitting, like not going back to therapy. But just changing up your therapist gives a brand new perspective. I do think it's massively beneficial. To be honest, you don't even have to go through like a major life trauma to avail of therapy. I think in terms of your professional development, every single person should get a couple of sessions. And to be honest, I feel like the first 3 to 4 sessions are superficial. You only really get down to it after that. And that's even with a really good therapist. And like, I love my therapist. She's amazing. And we are able to go straight into the point now at the minute. But the first 1 or 2 sessions is really, it's quite superficial. You're getting to know them. And at the end of the day, you have to be comfortable speaking to them to be able to get into your deepest, darkest thoughts and how you actually feel about certain things.
But if you put yourself in their shoes, it's the exact same thing coaching. When you meet a new athlete or you go in with a new club, first off, you don't go in and dictate, this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it and you're doing this wrong. You just listen and try to understand the person first. And that's what they're trying to do in the first few sessions. And as you said, I have experience similar in that, like, I did quit therapy because I didn't get on with the therapist whatsoever because I did find that specific therapist just dictated with me.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing about me, Brenda, it's that I don't like being told what to do.
Oh, if there's one thing about me, I hate repeating myself. So like, that's another thing about changing therapists, because you've just told one therapist your story. Now you go to the next therapist and you have to tell the story all over again. But realistically, like long term, if you just stick with that and find the right therapist, it's going to be overall more beneficial for you. Although I hate repeating myself to people.
Although if you're going down a road and it's not working, it's similar to working with a coach that it's not working for you, or the system isn't working, similar to your hamstring, like you have to be willing to try something new.
Yeah.
And if you don't try something new, I would suggest that potentially complaining about the same things cropping up over and over again is not worthwhile at all, because you haven't changed anything to try to change your circumstance or change the environment at all. And that's probably going out to athletes as well that are experiencing recurrent injuries or just aren't playing to their potential whatsoever. You have to be willing to try new things. And it sounds like you're definitely willing to try a lot of new things. You just had the trip to Lisbon by yourself. I know we glossed over it there, but how was that going away by yourself when, as you said, you have suffered in the past from a little bit of social anxiety?
I know, I suppose only looking now at it since I've come back, I'm like, geez, I done well, didn't I? And I think for the last year and a half or so, I've been trying to go on a solo trip, but it's a credit to my friends. They haven't let me go on my own. We've been back and forth from a few different places over the last year or two, just short breaks, city breaks, and someone has managed to come with me every single time I've went. So I did really want to go on a solo trip for the purpose of it being a solo trip, to get downtime for myself. And I booked Lisbon on the hush-hush. Didn't even tell my man that I was going till, like, I think it was like 5 or 6 days after I booked it. I knew I wouldn't be able to go with school anyway, but it was brilliant. It was really, really good. To be honest, I think, like, for me, it's more like the logistics of getting to the airport, being on time. I was on time today, and I, Peter, but it doesn't always happen.
Doesn't that?
No.
I wouldn't have thought.
No, not at all. Just being on time. But once you're there, it's 100%. It's great. It's like, Stephen was more worried about me going than I was myself in the end. And I was like, Stephen, I literally spend like half the week by myself online coaching in a random coffee shop anywhere in Ireland, what would be the difference in me doing that in Spain or Portugal or anywhere in the world? He's like, suppose. So it depends what way you look at it, really. To me, like, it was just the logistics of the airport, and being on time was the challenging aspect. Once it was there in the country, it was fine. And I actually do like I like being challenged and stimulated all the time. I like new things. So I think that's why I have no bother trying new things. It's nearly to my detriment all the time. That's the only thing, Peter, is what I'd say. But I did like the challenge of being away, figuring out how to get places, using public transport, getting around like that. So that was nice. And it probably is maybe the only trip I'm going to get between now and the end of the championship. So you have to grab those opportunities when they come.
It sounds like you're striving all the time. And when you're striving all the time, it can be difficult to just accept where you are and be grateful for where you are. But it also sounds like you are grateful for your group of friends, for your boyfriend, as you said there, and for your family and your teammates too.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've worked on? Or has that always been there?
I never really thought about that, to be honest. I'd say I probably, like, pre-2020, pre-losing mummy, like, I definitely just would have went about day to day without even being aware of, like, my own thoughts, or even just, like, small things like a cup of coffee in the morning, that I would just be so much more grateful now. And I'm not sure whether it's a process of me getting older or therapy or having suffered a massive loss in my life that has just made me a wee bit more grateful for the smallest little elements of my day. But I'm very thankful for it. I'm a completely different person than I was. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure where it's coming. It's probably an amalgamation of a lot of different things.
And it sounds like, as you said, you wouldn't be the person that you are now without having gone through that.
Yeah.
Which is a tough thing to take on and tough thing to accept too.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that? That would you have changed if things didn't go the way they went? You would hope that you would have.
Yeah, I'd hope that I would have, surely. Yeah. We had a very difficult year, and even in the year after mummy died as well, like, daddy was diagnosed with cancer. And that made me slow down. Like, I'm very much sort of a person that goes from one thing to the next, and let's strive for the next thing and the next thing, the next thing. And I think losing mum in the fashion that we did, and then daddy being sick as well, like, I had to slow down and take time for family, take time for me, even just to stop and consider my own feelings. So it was going to come at some stage, no matter what stimulus was. I think it was going to come at some stage. I'm not thankful that it happened in the way it did happen. Like, I'd love to have figured this out in another way, to be honest. But yeah, I'm very grateful for it happening, as well as the grief and the loss that we have suffered as a family. I would say, like, even just the ups and downs of inter-county football has definitely provoked a change in my mindset, and probably how I carry myself day to day as well. It's by no means easy. I think people look at inter-county athletes, whether it be male or female, and think of it as like a glamorous lifestyle. It's definitely not, especially when you're sitting on the fringes, and I have for many years. It's not nice, and it develops a type of steely resilience in you that I don't think can be developed in many other environments outside of sporting code.
The interesting thing is that in your coaching now, you probably come into contact with a lot more people that jump from one thing to the next and make themselves quite busy, like you used to, than you would have previously. Do you work on that with them, or do you even try to make them aware of that at times?
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. Like, the minute you say that, like, five names spring to mind, do you know? And I suppose it depends on the athlete and it depends on the approach, but obviously I have a lot of experience in that area now, so I'm trying to embark on them some of the knowledge and some of the things that are imparting them, some of the knowledge, some of the things that's helped me to date. But it definitely, it gives you a wider understanding of different athletes and just how they would approach things, and what maybe work for me may not work for them. But definitely been able to establish that rapport with them, that understanding that, yes, I get where you're coming from, I'm like that too. Some of them are not even aware that they're doing it, to be honest.
Most of them.
Yeah. No, most of them wouldn't be. I find the girls are a wee bit more self-aware than the boys. No offense. they generally are, though.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah, no, I suppose it has been beneficial with that regard. And I think as a coach, and especially me with an sort of like a bit of exposure online, I find a lot of people, I get a lot of DMs and stuff that people can resonate and relate to what I've been through, men and women. Yeah.
Is that why you've almost taken on that role then, to try to help people that were or are in a position that you previously were in? Or have you even
ever
thought
of
that?
I wouldn't say that's solely the why.
Yeah,
but I'd say that's definitely how I've landed myself here. It's definitely been how it started, I suppose. It's definitely what's probably sparked my interest the most, is my journey and how my journey can help other people.
Do you know what your why is then behind it? Because it sounds like you
behind do. Playing football or behind coaching or...
Behind your career change and behind going into S&C as a career. Do you know what you want to do and why you want to do it?
Yeah, I suppose we've talked about a lot of it already. It's multifaceted. It's an environment that I have thrived in. I continue to thrive in. I feel happiest there. I love working with people. I love helping people. I really love problem solving, things like that. I'm genuinely fascinated by the human body and science as well. I'm continually learning there, and I love being challenged, and I find no matter what environment you go into, whether it's online with the middle distance runner, or you're just working with general population client, or you come into a room full of 50 senior inter-county or club footballers, like, you're going to find a challenge in the room, and I love being challenged. I think that's what we figured out. I love being challenged, and I like finding answers to all questions. So, and it may not always be the same answer to a similar question that's asked, but I guess that's probably the long and short of it.
It sounds like you're really excited for the future, and you're probably the most excited for a role at S&C that I've ever seen anybody, which shows that you have a clear passion for it.
Yeah.
Is it the highlight of your day, going in and coaching, be it with teams or be it with individuals?
So I'm interning under an intercounty S&C coach this year, and I'm learning so much, but he's with an intercounty team and I am helping him on the floor with a club team. And I was so nervous going in. It's my first time working with, I've worked with a group of ladies before, but it's the first time working with a group of senior men. And it's just hard to know what the uptake will be like, especially with me being a female. Like, I just don't know. I think it's completely different than if you were to come into Fermanagh ladies, than if I was to come into wherever was full of senior men. I think it's hard to know what they're going to think of you. They could have several different opinions. Whereas I do think generally, I don't know, it's because I'm a female. I think generally if a male comes into our environment, it's just sort of the norm, but it's not the norm there. I only know of one female intercounty S&C coach, and she'd be goals for me now, to be fair, but I was very nervous at the time, so I was, but I'm learning loads there. I forget even now what the question is.
Did you try and change or reframe that those nerves into excitement at all, like you do when you're playing football? Might be a useful strategy in the future.
No, I was nervous as fuck. I was still nervous. And like, even the manager and stuff now, he would say, like, you've come on leaps and bounds even the last couple of weeks, like, you're less in your shell and you can express yourself more. And I suppose now that I see that the boys have buy into what I do and that they have respect for me, and the respect is mutual for them as well, that I can be more myself and be more comfortable in that environment, because it's a very different environment that I've ever been in, even as a player, you know, been in a completely all male environment. Even as a radiographer, it's mostly all females too, so it's very different for me, a massive challenge, but loved it. And recently someone asked me a question saying, well, would you rather work with the female athlete or the female youth athlete, or how you find work with males? And I'm like, I'd nearly actually rather work in an all male environment. But yeah, I suppose going down the line of like how excited I am to be an S&C coach, I was nervous taking on the job, took on the job, and like, I'm absolutely loving every single minute of it. And I mean, if the boys were in Timbuktu playing a challenge match against a Chinese Division 6 side, I would be there. I'd be that excited about it. I just love the environment. Honestly do.
It's mad how the dynamics of the environment and how they communicate with each other differs from a female group, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
And a male to female then, for me, like going from male into female was just so different in how you have to communicate with them.
For sure.
What do you enjoy most about working with the male group? Is it the directness or...
That's just, I don't even know if it's appropriate to say that. You can just be so much more direct. I feel generally like the communication is better.
We better preface as well. You can be more direct because they don't want that. They don't want too many words. They just want the point.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah, to it.
Girls sometimes or females like more instructions because they want to know that they're doing it correctly. So they want all of the details. Whereas lads, from my experience anyway with teams, they expect that they're doing it correctly anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're just like, give me one cue, I'll just do it that way.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I suppose you don't have to cue it as much. But yeah, you can definitely be more direct. And if something is not going well, then you can just call it out. You don't have to beat around the bush. There's certain areas as well, even like nutrition, body composition, even just pushing them on in the gym. It's just a little bit easier. You can be a bit more blunt, I guess. In the same token, I still find myself in the room, like I gravitate towards players who I feel are similar to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, players that maybe are underdeveloped, maybe haven't seen their athletic potential yet. Players that are maybe quieter, like I would have been in that environment when I was first. I genuinely just gravitate towards some of the development squad.
At least you're aware of that though.
Yeah, yeah, massively. So I do find myself gravitating towards players that I see similar traits than I had at that age, sort of thing as well.
Because you want to help them because
I want
you've
to
been
help
there.
Them. Yeah.
But if you're aware of it, then at least you'll know then that, look, I'm probably not giving other athletes in the group
and
the same
yes,
level of care.
This is it.
So you can go and try to do that. Whereas we've both been in groups or in setups as players where managers have favourites and you're very aware who the favourites are.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not nice either. And it's the same thing as an S&C coach.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a work on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But well done, Brenda. We got through it all. Some very difficult questions there, but if you don't mind, we'll move on to quickfire questions
that's
to finish.
Go for it.
First one is proudest achievement to date.
Probably would be winning the Intermediate Ulster Club with the Argonne Harps. Not far behind that, probably is a wee bit behind it, would be getting to Croke Park to play an All-Ireland final with Fermanagh in, is that 2022? Definitely an unfinished feeling there. It's sort of a bittersweet. We played in Croker that day and drew, and then we were beat in the replay. So I'm hoping now we can better that. I'll have another one to add to this list then.
Yeah.
Maybe the next time I'm on.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, so it'll probably be those two. Like, I always have dreamed of playing in Croker. So it was good to tick that off. But I do think it's high time that we've won an All-Ireland in Croke Park, because we never have done so with Fermanagh. So yeah.
Well, you have another couple of months and then you're into Championship. So
this is it.
It's
yeah.
all the
three,
horizon.
3 weeks and we have Ulster. So yeah, it's flying around.
And you've had a bit of a break as well. So I'm sure you're going to be fresh after you sort the hamstring out and you'll be ready to
The hamstring's
jump into
going well.
It.
The hamstring's going well.
Favourite athlete of all time?
I've never had like one out and out that I've absolutely adored for so many years. But I suppose like definitely in the last couple of years, like I would always keep a tight eye on Ethan Doherty from Derry. Like, I see a lot of myself and him. I would aspire to be as good of an athlete as him. And then I'd keep a tight eye on Fenton as well. Then I suppose outside of the men's code, I'd definitely be a big fan of Carla Rowe. Love her. I marked her once actually in a university game. Yeah, showing up badly. So yeah, I'd love to be like her, in fairness. Outside of GAA, I love Katie Taylor, and then I'm a massive fan of Olivia May. She's an Aussie sprinter.
It's so funny that all of your favourite athletes are similarly industrious. Like, they all have incredibly high work rate.
Mm.
It's probably the thing that you admire most in them, and also the thing that's most similar about you with them.
Yeah, I suppose I'm just thinking like of the style of player. Like, realistically, I'm not going to be a marquee full forward in the next 5 or 6 years. So, yeah.
What's the biggest thing you've learned in the last 12 months?
In the last 12 months, I suppose, on taking on the Masters, that was a massive decision to take that on. It's put back our goal as a couple to go to Australia by at least 12 months. It's a big decision, I suppose, in me even going down the S&C route, because I was probably at a bridge in the road whenever, or a fork in the road whenever I decided to take that master on, whether I would go down sports performance nutrition route or go down S&C route. Even taking it on was massive, to be honest. I knew it was going to place massive strain on myself and probably every other aspect of my life, which it has done. But I think what I've learned is that you'll make the time for something that you really want. I don't even know if make the time is the word. Like, I suppose time is more of like a currency for me, that you'll exchange out things that are of less value. So yeah, that's what I've learned, and I suppose I'm quite good at that now at this point, on scheduling.
Absolutely. And we got this scheduled in, and it's of high value, obviously. So yeah, I appreciate you coming today. Last question. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
My 18-year-old self, who was probably pushed into a career in radiography that I never really wanted by external pressures such as family, status quo, friends, just generally just following what other people were doing. I think I would be telling her to listen to what you really want to do. Focus on things, or try and even just identify things that you're strong at, things that you're really, really good at. Explore that. Figure out what you really like to do and go after that. See if there's somewhere within that that you can create a career. I know for me as an 18-year-old self, we had just come out of a recession, and that may not have been possible. Like, I don't have a massive regret of going down the radiography route. Like, we still potentially could be in a recession for all I've known at that point. But I think now in this day and age, there is plenty of space for everyone to gain a career out of anything you should wish to do so. But just to make sure it's something that you absolutely love. And I've probably got round to it now. It's took me, 10 or 11 years to figure out what I like.
And good job.
It's never too late, even if you do choose the wrong undergraduate career or the wrong course. Like, you'll find your way.
There's always a way. And
yeah.
What I was just about to add is, it's a good job it didn't take you 20. Took 10. So you're here now, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Great conversation and a great message to any youngsters that are heading into Leaving Cert now, I suppose, and picking their college courses, as well as older people that are maybe stuck in a job that they don't like. So thanks for coming on, Brenda.
Thank you.
An absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you.